Spin 1038.
And the Oscar goes to...
And the Oscar goes to...
We Love Movies with Gordon Hayden.
Thank you to the Academy.
Now on We Love Movies, before we review Beauty and the Beast with Rory Cashin, it's the big film out in cinemas this weekend, let's hear from its stars Emma Watson and Dan Stevens. Here they are telling us about how important it was to have Dan play the Beast in person as opposed to the character being fully CGI.
You know what? This was the joy for me, and this is what I've been telling people, is I've worked with special effects a lot, but often I'm looking at an LED light, or I'm looking at a tennis ball, or just an X marks the spot kind of thing. To actually have Dan there in person, and most of the time not to have actually a ton of dots on his face, was such a luxury. And I think it really shows in the scenes that there's a real human there, and there's a real humanity to the Beast, and you really believe that we're falling in love.
Yeah, it was one of the great things about the choice of technology that we went with in the end was the sensitivity of the human face that you can now get through a digital mask like that. And yeah, it's quite amazing.
We Love Movies with Gordon Hayden.
Joining me now in studio to review Beauty and the Beast is Rory Cashin. Now, Rory, for anyone that needs a little bit of a reminder of
what?
The story.
Who would need a reminder?
There's probably a few people, Rory.
Here. Fair enough. Right, for you few people who don't know what's going on, Belle, who in this is played by Emma Watson, is a bit of a bookworm and she doesn't quite fit in with the parochial town that she's a part of. And Gaston, who's played by Luke Evans, really wants to be her husband, but because he's a bit of a brute and a bit low in the IQ, she's no interest. But her dad, who's played by Kevin Kline, wanders into the wrong house in the middle of a storm and ends up becoming the prisoner of the Beast, who's played by Dan Stevens. And Emma Watson goes in and swaps places with her dad and becomes the Beast's prisoner instead. And over the course of time, slowly begins to fall for him, while back in the town, Luke Evans and Kevin Kline and the rest of them have all decided that the Beast needs to be killed so they can save the day, and hopefully he can prove to Emma Watson that he should be her husband.
All right. Now, last week, Rory did say he had some things he really wanted to get off his chest about this film. But before we hear what they are, Rory, let's just tease it out a little bit longer.
All right.
Here's a clip from Beauty and the Beast.
You will join me for dinner. That's not a request.
Gently, Master. The girl lost her father and her freedom in one day.
Yes, the poor thing is probably in there scared to death.
Exactly.
Just a minute.
You see, there she is. Now, remember, be gentle.
Kind.
Charming.
Sweet. And when she opens the door, give her a dashing debonair smile. Come, come, show me the smile.
Oh, my dear.
Now, Rory, we have titillated people enough because there's things you want to say about this film that really perturbed you, Rory.
Yes, I was. It's something that I think only really landed when I seen the live-action version, because you will make a lot of excuses for a cartoon, mm-hmm. I think. Anything animated, especially, like, when was this? This was 1990?
Yeah, it was like the second golden age of Disney when it came out.
It was the only ever animated movie to be nominated for Best Picture.
So there you go.
But, right, in reality, this is essentially Stockholm Syndrome, the movie. This is a girl who has been kidnapped and imprisoned by a beast, and having spent more and more time with him, starts to fall in love with him. That is essentially, like, Stockholm Syndrome, if you look it up.
I remember chatting to some of the girls in the office about it, and they felt very much the same. And
yeah.
Maybe because I was looking at this movie through the rose-tinted animated
world.
I was thinking, really, I think you're reading into it a bit too much. You know what I mean? It is a fairy tale, but I can understand where you're coming from, because he does not want her to leave his castle. So, but are there any redeeming features about the Beast that you think he's not really the nefarious, sinister captor?
They do try to give him more of a sympathetic slant in it, like, by over the course of the film explaining why he is the way he is, but there's no real redemption for his actions in kidnapping her and imprisoning her in the first place. Like, essentially it's because her dad came and took a rose from his garden. That's why he imprisons the dad, and then Belle swaps places with the dad So he just kind of keeps her and decides, you know, that you'll just live in this cage and I'm not going to feed you.
Yeah.
And then once she gets a nice dress in her and she's fed, then she's like, oh, actually, he's kind of, maybe I'm into this now.
And she is falling in love with an animal.
Yeah, it's bestiality. You just want to, he does look like a wildebeest.
Like, the more you think about it, this is a whole lot of wrong.
It's like we you know, it's pretty edgy if you actually take a step back and think about what the story
Disney,
is about.
Disney, what are you at?
You're telling a story about a woman who falls in love with an animal who imprisons her. This is gonna, we're getting very human centipede in our, what is this about exactly? And we're sending our kids to this. Okay. Now, I know we spent a lot of time talking about the potential wrongs of the film, but if you like the way we were when we seen the animated one, if you're willing to look over that.
And don't think of it like an animated version of Joseph Fritzl.
No. Christ almighty, that is a dark joke. Yes, if you can forgive it? No. If you can put your blinders on to, yes, let's say, that aspect of it. It does have an awful lot in common with Kenneth Branagh's Cinderella that we've seen two or three years ago, in that, you know, the costumes are amazing. Like, the screening I was in, I heard women literally gasping at the dresses that they put on Emma Watson. The production design is one of those things where you're like, well, that's probably going to win an Oscar next year because everything is over the top and so opulent. Supporting cast are really good, except for Hugh McGregor. Why on earth they decided to make him French is beyond me. But Emma Thompson's quite good.
Yeah.
Ian McKellen, Stanley Tucci, like, they're all really, really good. Dan Stevens does a good job as the Beast.
Actually, speaking of that, because we did hear from Dan Stevens and Emma Watson was talking up about how it was great that he was there on set, that he wasn't just a CGI character.
Yeah.
What did you make of the CGI, though?
It takes a little bit to get used to, but, like, about 10 minutes in, it's seamless. Okay. It's absolutely fine. And it is impressive, the kind of, you know, the stature, the hulk of the Beast, and how immediately he does seem quite intimidating and scary. But then over the course of the film, he's like, he's just a little cuddly thing. You just want to, all he needed was a hug and to kidnap this girl, and then everything was fine. But yeah, and he's good in it. Emma Watson is fine. She's about as forgettable as what her face was in Cinderella.
Yes.
I know it was Lily James, but she may as well have been anyone. Again, surprisingly, and I'm as shocked as anyone, Luke Evans was incredible in this.
Well,
he's perfectly cast in this.
Because he does reek of someone, if they were a cat, they would lick themselves.
He does the swarmy, you know, I know I'm better than you, but I'm willing to lower to your level if you'll accept that, and then we can be happy together. As long as you constantly are aware I am better than you. And he does that really, really well.
He didn't even have to act.
No, he just had to be, he was Luke Evans in old clothes. That's all he was. But again, really, really good. And he's someone who 2 years ago I was like, this man cannot act. He's just there with his roast beef face and just can't act. But after this and High Rise, I'm like, he just needs to be smaller characters who are evilly tinted. And then he's done.
Yeah, he's not. I think there was a time they were looking at, we could make him into a star. Like, he is leading man material. And I don't know did he get found out a bit with Dracula Untold?
Probably, yeah. Well, that film didn't help anyone who was involved anyway, but yeah, he just seem to be much, much better suited to very interesting, albeit smaller roles. So it's fine, perfectly watchable, very entertaining. The singing and the numbers, all the ones that you loved are in it, and a few new ones are in there as well. It's very pretty to look at, but there is that massive, massive hump that you probably will have to overcome in order to properly enjoy it.
Let's hope there's an awful lot of parents don't have to explain Stockholm Syndrome to their children on the drive home in the car.
No, like, it's because after Enchanted and after Frozen, and I felt like, and Moana, I guess, to an extent, I felt like Disney were, you know, being very progressive with their, princess stories.
Yes.
And in this, it just feels like they're taking 3 or 4 massive steps backwards. And it's like, yeah, like, we are claiming that Belle is well-read and can handle herself perfectly fine, but on the other hand,
but it's a tale as old as time, Rory.
Yeah, but so, like, we've progressed as humanity, as you know, we've moved forward. Tale as old as time. you know, you don't look too far back. Women didn't have to vote. Women didn't. There's lots of things women didn't do, and in this, women don't have the ability to.
I'll see your tale as old as time.
Yes, with sexism.
Rory, out of 10?
Okay, 6.5. I think it is still solid, and it probably will make a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I feel there was a missed opportunity in maybe tweaking it for modern audiences.
Okay, Rory Cash, thank you so much for that. Rory's going to be back a little later on. Two films we're going to take a look at. One of them is a horror movie which has done huge business in America. Yeah. It's called Get Out. It's a horror comedy. It's from Blumhouse, the guys who made Paranormal Activity, Insidious, and the Sinister movies. It's getting some fantastic reviews, and we'll find out what Rory thought of it a little later on We Love Movies.
When Hollywood comes to Dublin, We Love Movies with Gordon Hayden. Spin 103.8.
This week saw the trailer drop for Baby Driver. It's the new film from Edgar Wright, the director of such films as Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. Before we have a chat about Edgar Wright's career, here's a little bit from the trailer to Baby Driver.
Shop, let's talk it. The target is an armored truck at Perimeter Trust. 10 a.m. sharp. Bank is right next to the switch car, baby. Hit the long stay parking structure. Start in the a.m. questions.
I got a question, Doc. Why would I believe phones over here hear the goddamn word you said? He ain't even listening.
Baby, the target is an armored truck at Perimeter Trust in Dunwoody, 10 a.m. sharp. The switch car is ready, but you want me to hit the long stay parking structure and get a heist vehicle that stays colder longer? It needs to be ready for an 8:30 start. Questions?
Now, when We Love Movies, let us hear from director Edgar Wright. Here he is on the red carpet for the world premiere of Baby Driver, telling us about a scene in Shaun of the Dead which planted the seed to craft a movie all around certain songs.
Well, there are, like, scenes in my other movies, isolated scenes, which are a little bit like parts of this film. For example, in Shaun of the Dead, there's a fight scene set to Queen, and I really, like, love doing scenes like that, so Baby Driver is my attempt to do an entire movie like that. So it's different from my other movies in a lot of ways, but I think fans in my other movies will find lots of joy.
Edgar Wright there speaking at the South by Southwest Festival. That was where Baby Driver had its world premiere. Joining me now is Andy McCarroll. Andy, before we talk about Edgar Wright's career to date, what did you think of the trailer to Baby Driver?
I was really impressed for it, especially coming off the back of The World's End, which he was kind of born by. It would have been very easy for him to kind of fall back into something now safe, you know, get the Simon Pegg project and do like a kind of a straightforward comedy. He's gone for something like completely left field. It's an entire cast that he's never worked with, and it's an A-list cast at that. You've got Kevin Spacey, you've got John Hamm, Jamie Foxx, and John Bernthal, who was Punisher in the Daredevil series. And it just looks like a really highly stylized American movie, which is something he's never done before. And it's something, like, based on the trailer, I'm really, really excited to see.
Because people mightn't realize, or they might have forgotten, was that he was the original director for Ant-Man. And things didn't go according to plan, and then Peyton Reed was brought in because Edgar very much had his own idea of how this film should be made, the type of superhero flick he wanted to get across. But Marvel felt, no, we have to have a bit of cross-pollination, you have to follow our rules and our template, and that didn't go down well with Edgar, hence why he decided to jettison the project and go with Baby Driver. Is that how things panned out, Andy? Am I getting that right?
Yeah, not too far off there. It's basically, he was announced as the director of Ant-Man at the same press conference that Robert Downey Jr. was announced to be playing Iron Man, just to give you an idea of how far back, I think it's 12 years now, he was first announced. And what happened was he had a very distinct vision for what Ant-Man wanted to be. He wanted it to not look like another superhero film. And you can see that with his adaptation of Scott Pilgrim. Like, Scott Pilgrim is very much, you know, one of the most comic booky, a phrase I've just invented now, looking films. And the Marvel movies, like, for all the great things they do, every one of them kind of looks the same, and I don't think they should. If you have a character like Ant-Man, he should look tonally completely different to something like Captain America. And I think that's where he kind of clashed heads on them, because when he wanted the eventual team up of the Avengers, he wanted it to be, you know, five very separate movies coming together, as opposed to, you know, five films that have followed the kind of the same formula And it just, you know, it's, you know, synergy, as they say, to kind of sync them all up together.
Yeah, because the test footage that originally did come out of Edgar Wright's take on the tone and style of Ant-Man was really, really impressive. And it definitely had a bit of a darker vibe to it, to the sort of the candy-flavoured look that we got from Peyton Reed. But anyway, Ant-Man didn't happen, and now we have Baby Driver, which we all can look forward to seeing when it hits cinemas over the coming months. But let's sort of work our way backwards, Andy. Now, you did mention Scott Pilgrim. Before we have a quick chat about it, here's a little clip from Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
If you want something bad, you have to fight for it. Step up your game, Scott. Break out the L word.
Lesbian?
The other L word.
Lesbians?
It's love, Scott. I wasn't trying to trick you.
Andy, Scott Pilgrim, it's one of those movies that I think will become a bit of a cult classic, but when it was released in cinemas, it bombed. It just did not find an audience, and it's stylistically and aesthetically, it is fantastic.
It looks absolutely gorgeous, as I said, and the soundtrack is brilliant. And the thing is as well, it, like, on the things like Rotten Tomatoes, seen it, really loved it, and it's really, like, anyone who's seen it's kind of had nothing but positive things to say about it. I remember Quentin Tarantino going on a long-winded rant about how much he loved it and how it was such a different film from every other comic book movie. Even the creator, Brian Lee O'Malley, who wrote the series, said it's as close to a perfect comic book adaptation as you're going to see. It just didn't really connect, especially in the kind of the wave of all, you know, the Iron Man and, you know, the kind of the large-scale superhero films. I think there was a kind of comic book fatigue around that time, and I thought people didn't really know what they were letting themselves in for that. It wasn't marketed particularly well. Mm. It just looked, it's not a film that plays itself to a trailer. It's not something you could watch, like, you know, a minute and a half of out of context clips and say that's what you want to see. The people who went to see it were people who, you know, were aware of it beforehand or would have been fans of Edgar Wright. And they're, you know, kind of shooting fish in a barrel. It just didn't really cross over into a mainstream audience.
Would it be unfair to say it might come across a little bit overly hipster?
Yeah, absolutely. And considering as well with the cast, you know, if you cast Michael Cera, automatically you're going to have that kind of hipster thing. But even, you know, people like Kieran Culkin in the film, and, you know, the seven exes of Rockville, you know, played by kind of indie darlings as well. So it is kind of, you know, there is the potential there to kind of see it disappear up its own arse, but I don't think the Finnish film actually did that.
Let's talk now about the Cornetto trilogy, which a lot of us absolutely loved, and we'll talk in more detail about Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz in a moment, but the concluding part in the trilogy was The World's End, a film which so many people were excited for, and it really seemed, Andy, that the British critics, their view of it was very different to the Irish critics, because over here, it just didn't seem to really work. And I found the film an absolute muddled mess. And I thought it was a poor entry. But then again, that tends to sometimes happen with trilogies, that the third one just tends to be the weakest. What did you think of it?
I think there's a lot of good parts to it. Again, it would be the one of the three that I wouldn't go back and rewatch. I think I've only seen it. I've seen it when it came out and then once on DVD. As you said, it's a kind of muddled mess of a film. There's not really something there. It doesn't owe itself to repeat watches, and even at the first attempt, it wasn't, it's not laugh out loud funny, it's kind of serious, but it's set with, you know, aliens and, you know, a invasion of the body snatchers light sort of plot line as well, so it doesn't really lend itself to anything. They're trying to straddle a couple of fences there at the same time and doesn't really achieve any of them, really.
No, and it doesn't have the likeable characters that Hot Fuzz or Shaun of the Dead had, because too many of them have their own baggage, and there's just not enough. The witty interplay between them just isn't as sharp as the previous films, unfortunately. Now, Hot Fuzz, this is a movie that really wanted to parody the action films, and even the title Hot Fuzz, they kind of wanted to go with almost an over-the-top action-sounding title. I think it was Edgar Wright's, his whole take on it was, if you can imagine Tony Scott directed an episode of Midsummer Night Murders, this is what we're going to get from it. I have to say, Andy, Hot Fuzz, when I first saw it, I was like, yeah, it's good, it's good. But on repeat viewings, I've come to love it more.
I actually loved it straight away. It's like Lethal Weapon, Point Break, matched with Mrs. Marple. It's just, it's fantastic. I think Nick Frost and Simon Pegg, their chemistry that they've had since, you know, Spaced and Shaun of the Dead, I think it really plays here. Nick Frost playing that kind of lovable man-child, and Simon Pegg, a kind of straightforward, serious cop, which is a role we kind of really hadn't seen him play, the straight man. He kind of buffed up somewhat for this role as well. But even the supporting characters, you know, you have Timothy Dalton.
Oh, who's brilliant.
Hammond. He's fantastic in that film. And even the set pieces, like the fight in the model village, it's like something out of Godzilla. It's just ridiculous. And then it ends with that, you know, his face going through the steeple. I'm just like, okay, that's a bit nasty now. So it doesn't kind of skimp on the violence either. And the action scenes themselves are actually really good, like the shootout in the supermarket, a few of the car chases, like they do actually look really, really well.
It's a slick production all round, and it does have a nice bit of a horror element going on. There's almost a Wicker Man vibe going on in places. Just before we move on, Andy, here's a little clip from Hot Fuzz. This is a scene involving Martin Freeman. You also have Steve Coogan in there as Simon Pegg's superiors. This is a great little moment earlier on in the movie.
I'd like to talk to the inspector.
You can speak to the inspector, but I can promise you he will tell you exactly the same thing as I am. Hello, Nicholas. How's the hand?
It's still a bit stiff.
And how are things at home?
I'm sorry, sir.
How's Janine?
We're no longer together, sir.
Right, well, then where are you living?
He's staying at the section house, sir.
With the recruits?
Yes, he's living out of cardboard boxes.
Well, then you're packed already.
And next up, Andy, Shaun of the Dead came out in 2004, very much at a time when zombies were back in fashion. And this film really managed to make Edgar Wright, Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. They broke into the States with this film and has become a cult gem. They were riding reasonably high off the success of Spaced, but this one put them in a new stratosphere altogether.
Yeah, you're saying that this was kind of the part of the zombie. I think this actually kicked off the zombie explosion. It was this and 28 Days Later were kind of released around similar times. And I think you kind of have them to thank, or rather not thank, for the, you know, the likes of The Walking Dead and the kind of big influx of zombie films that came. This, you know, and also creating the term a rom-com, it's just something that just exploded into the public consciousness. Now, for me, it's an absolute classic of a film. It's not just like a good comedy. I think this is kind of like an all-time great film. And as that was shown, was voted recently in Radio 1 as the second best film of all time.
Oh, wow.
Behind The Shawshank Redemption, which is kind of high praise indeed. Like, it's kind of, if you have a poll like that, if you see Shaun of the Dead very high, and it's usually very close to the release date, but this was only, I think, 2 years ago.
Mm.
So it's still very much, you know, at the forefront of public consciousness. It plays wonderfully onto the zombie genre. You can really see how much Edgar Wright, Simon Pegg just love zombie movies. And it's a kind of a rare horror comedy where the horror can be scary, but the comedy is really funny. Usually when you get, you know, kind of cross genre like that, one of them tends to fail. But this one is absolutely perfect. Now, to me, it's a flawless film. I love every character in it. I could rewatch this film every day for the rest of my life and I would never get bored of it.
I can hear the love coming through for it, Andy. You're not holding back. It's unbelievable. Do you know what? Actually, I must go back and rewatch it again because I loved it when I first saw it. And there's so many gags and they come thick and fast, but they're so clever and witty that it really does stand up to repeat viewing.
If we hole up, I want to be somewhere familiar. I want to know where the exits are and I want to be allowed to smoke. Okay. Take Pete's car, go round Mum's, go in, deal with Philip.
Sorry, Philip.
Grab Mum, go to Liz's, pick her up, bring her back here, have a cup of tea and wait for all this to blow over. Perfect.
Andy, thank you so much for taking a look at the career so far of Edgar Wright. Baby Driver will be in cinemas this year. We cannot wait to see it. The trailer looks absolutely fantastic. If you haven't had a chance to check it out, do so on spin1038.com. But for now, Andy McCarroll, thank you so much.
Thanks, Gordon.
We Love Movies with Gordon Hayden.
And that is it for part one of We Love Movies. Coming up in part two, we'll have the rest of this weekend's new cinema releases, plus we'll have the movie news. One story in particular will be of interest to Star Wars fans. You do not want to miss that. That's all coming up very shortly, right here on We Love Movies.